So good morning. I'm going to speak on what we're set free to, which sort of follows on from what Margaret was speaking about last week. I'm very mad and very happy, aren't I? Do you need me to keep talking, right? Okay. So I get to talk about what we're set free to, and when I saw this on the list of sermons, and it's the first one that I've actually spoken on, which is part of the theme. I've been in a life go off teeth, which has been great, but now I've got to stick within the theme. And at first I thought, oh, this is going to be really easy, you know, it's all what we're set free to, that's great. And then as I sort of looked at it, it suddenly became quite difficult, because I'm not sure that I myself fully grasp what it really means to be free in Jesus and how to live in that freedom. And, you know, when I do grasp it, do I then actually go and do it? And so it was quite difficult for me. So I've learned a lot, and I hope that what I say now will help you as well. So I'm going to cover three points which sort of came to me. The first is how we're set free, because I think it's really important that if we don't realise how we are set free, we can never really live in it. Secondly, what is freedom just generally? I think John mentioned earlier about we live in a really free country, and I think it's important that we recognise what freedom is just for everything. And then thirdly, what is the freedom that we're set free to? So I'm going to try and put into context the cost that was paid for our freedom. And I hope it will kind of give us an idea of, you know, what we're looking at, because sometimes I think it is so huge that it's really difficult to understand it and really appreciate it. So, if you go to the next slide. In 1833, the British Empire passed the Slavery Act, which freed over 800,000 slaves in the British Empire. To do this, the government basically bought their freedom. They raised £20 million in 1833. That was 5% of GDP. If we did the same today, that would be £100 billion. Now, who's paid tax before 2015 here? Most of us. You paid for the freedom of the slaves. We didn't pay that money back until 2015. It took us almost 200 years to buy the freedom of the slaves that were in the British Empire. I can't quite understand those sums of money, but my goodness me, that is a huge price for people's freedom. So when we think about that and how much Jesus did to buy the freedom of the world, how different is that? So our freedom wasn't bought in terms of pounds sterling or dollars or anything like that, but by the death of Jesus. I'm going to read Matthew 27, verses 26 to 46, so bear with me a second. Then he released Barabbas to them, but he had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. Then the governor's soldiers took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole company of soldiers around him. They stripped him and put on a scarlet robe on him, and then twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on his head. They put a staff in his right hand, then they knelt in front of him and mocked him. "Hail, King of the Jews," they said. They spat on him and took the staff and struck him on the head again and again. After they had mocked him, they took off the robe and put his own clothes on him. Then they led him away to crucify him. As they were going out, they met a man from Cyrene named Simon, and they forced him to carry the cross. They came to a place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. There they offered Jesus wine and to drink, mixed with gall. But after tasting it, he refused to drink it. Then they crucified him. They divided up his clothes by casting lots, and sitting down, they kept watch over him there. Above his head, they placed the written charge against him: "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Two rebels were crucified with him, one on his right hand and one on his left. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads, saying, "You who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself, come down from the cross, if you are the Son of God." In the same way, the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the elders mocked him. "He saved others," they said, "but he can't save himself. He's the King of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross, and we will believe in him. He trusts God. Let God rescue him now, if he wants him. But he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" In the same way, the rebels who were crucified with him also heaped insults on him. From noon until 3 in the afternoon, darkness came over all the land. About 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" So, the story of the Passion, we hear how Jesus was scourged. Good, the next slide. This was a horrific on its own. He could rend the flesh from the person's back, he could kill a person in his own right. He was humiliated, mocked, laughed at. He was paraded while struggling with a cross through the streets of Jerusalem to Calvary, which was then where he was nailed to the cross and erected on the top of a hill so everybody could see him and see the humiliation and condemnation he suffered. Crucifixion was brutal and humiliating. It was a punishment designed for maximum terror. People could take days dying while on those crosses. So it was cruel enough. But it's not this which actually brought our freedom. I want you to try for a second to imagine that Jesus had spent an eternity with God. He was wholly inseparable from God. If you could flick on to the next slide. And you know, from the beginning, if we go to the words of John, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. He knew nothing other than a perfect relationship with God. And yet, as he died, he cried out, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," my God, why have you forsaken me?" Our freedom was brought by God separating himself from his Son, and Jesus willingly being separated from his perfect relationship with his Father. You know, we can only imagine the relationship that they had. You know, an eternity spent together, and suddenly that is rent apart. And he did that so that we could have the same relationship that he had with God. So, now that we understand how much our freedom costs, you know, what does that then mean for us living our life with Jesus? So the dictionary defines freedom as the power to act, speak, or think as one wants, the state of not being imprisoned or enslaved. Now, before I try and go into the details of what we should do as living in freedom, just outline how lucky we are to live in a free country. You know, we have freedom that some people around the globe can only hope of having. You know, we're free to vote, whatever our sex or financial situation, whatever opinions we may have. We're free to stand here in a state-run secondary school and worship God. You know, we can hold different beliefs, we can go to different churches, we can go to different, have different religions. Our freedom here in the UK is amazing. But I think sometimes even this freedom we take for granted. So, we don't get that freedom through Jesus' resurrection. The freedom that Jesus brought for us is much harder to grasp and much harder to live in. I hope I illustrate that now, and I pray that the words that I use, you know, which are just my words, will reveal something which is true freedom to us all. Keith has often said that his favourite verse is John 10:10, which will come up on the screen now for those of you that are not in our home group and may not remember it. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. Jesus wants us to have an amazing, full life. But what does that look like? Is it so that we can sit back in the knowledge of our salvation and wait to die and go to heaven? Is it so that we can never suffer, live comfortable lives, drive nice Mercedes and live in big houses and never worry about a thing? We need to look into the Bible to see what that freedom is and what it means for our lives. Firstly, it's a choice. Jesus died on the cross, separated himself from God for the whole world. Everybody in the world was set free by Jesus' death and resurrection. However, We then have a choice whether to follow that or not. It is our decision, and it's our decision whether we choose to do it. And if we choose to do it, then it should affect our whole lives, not just the little bits that we don't mind being part of, like Sunday mornings or prayer meetings, the whole lot. When I was researching this, I read a bit of Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis, and in that, there's a bit, and I'm going to paraphrase it spectacularly, but basically saying that a relationship with Jesus is a bit like, you know, going to the dentist. Because he says, you know, when I have a toothache, I go to my mum in the evening, she'd give me some paracetamol and the pain would go. But the next day, she would then take me to the dentist. And she said sometimes he didn't want to tell his mum that he had a toothache because he knew that, okay, he'd get the aspirin and the pain would go, but he'd also get the trip to the dentist where the dentist would then sort the problem out. And he didn't like that because he wouldn't just play with one tooth, he'd then find any other teeth that could cause further problems. So what are you saying was, you know, it's like that. We can go to Jesus and then we've got this little problem, yes, he may fix that, but he's also going to want to fix anything else that we have going on. He's not going to stop at the aspirin. So it's a scary thing. You know, Lucy would back for that about going to dentist being scary. So that's the thing. It is not just going to be a small aspirin just to deal with a little bit. It is the whole thing. When we go back to Genesis, we see how God intended the world to be. There's Adam and Eve, they're in a perfect relationship with God, he walks in the garden with them, then sin enters, selfishness, greed, wanting to be equal to God, whatever it is, it enters the world and our relationship is then broken with God. He then spends a lot of time trying to bring us back and to him. You know, we have the Ten Commandments are handed to Moses on Mount Sinai, rules for how to love each other. Because I think that's the first thing, when God created the world, he created it out of love. He created us out of love. And he wants to have a loving relationship with all of us. You know, if you go through the Ten Commandments, they're all about love. You know, love God. You can't murder someone and then somehow claim that you love them. It doesn't work. You know, you can't want something that somebody else has had and sort of covet it. If you love them, that just doesn't work. So, the freedom that Jesus bought for us was to demonstrate, to live like him. And he lived a holy, loving life. With all the people that he met, there was love. So if you go on to the next verse, which is from Galatians 5:13. You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly and in love. Pretty clear what we're meant to do with our freedom. So I'll stop there. Okay. I'll carry on, because I think it's important that we look at how Jesus showed that, and also what those that followed him and wrote the book of the Bible were trying to get us to listen to, get the people that they were writing to, and also how that still applies to us today. In John 15:14, we're told that there is no greater love than to lay down our lives for each other. Growing up, I often heard this quoted, but in the sense that, you know, it's all, you know, dying for other people in a literal sense. It was often quoted in that sense. And I'm reading it again, I suddenly realise it's not meant that we're all meant to go and die for our friends, but we're meant to die to our own selfishness for our friends. So we're meant to put their lives ahead of our own, not put our own selfish ambitions ahead of what they need. And it's quite a dramatic sacrifice. You know, if there's something you're really passionate about or keen about, and somebody says, well, you've got to do this, because that will help someone else, it's quite a difficult thing to sort of give it up. You know, this morning, Wales were playing France in the rugby. And I'm glad it started at 8:15, because I didn't have a difficult decision for coming here at 10:30. Had it been like that at 10:20, it may have been a little bit harder to leave the sofa. But
I was sleeping, so I had to be here, and thankfully the Japanese arranged the World Cup for my benefit. So Jesus demonstrates the freedom that we're meant to live in throughout the Gospels. Bill spoke a few weeks ago on condemnation, and there's the woman who is called the same name. Jesus showed love. At home group the other day, Steve made a mistake and mentioned the woman in the well rather than the woman at the precious stone, not in the well, at the well. Again, he speaks to a woman who is out in the middle of the day, in the hottest part of the day, because she can't come out at any other time, and Jesus chooses to speak to her. He touches lepers who have probably spent most of their life with no human contact. He heals the children of the oppressing army that the Jews hate beyond measure and want rid of. But he heals their children, their servants. He eats with those considered to be the dregs of society, tax collectors, prostitutes. He doesn't sit with the Pharisees and spout high and mighty rules and regulations about how all these people are terrible. He goes and has dinner with them. He talks to them, he helps them, he provides what they need. In Corinthians 13:4-13, I've got 133, but I'm not going to read that many verses. Paul describes what love is. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails, but where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put on the puts the ways of childhood behind me, for now we see only a reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. If we look at the first part of that, if we love, then all the things that we've spoken about, judgment, you know, condemnation, they can't happen. If you are patient, you will wait for people to realise it. If you are, don't keep a record of wrongs, you can't bear grudges. You know, it's as simple as that. If we love, then all the things that we've spoken about how we're blinded, will be sorted out. Now, it sounds really easy when I sit here. It's the opposite. And I think, and that's the really important thing, it sounds so easy to love people, but somehow, because of what we are, human, and occasionally selfish, a bit determined to look better, be considered better, improve ourselves, then, you know, that's where we fall down. But how does this look? You know, this love is quite a sort of ethereal thing. It's very easy to sort of talk about. What does that actually mean? So James, who I really like, and I've spoken about him again before, but I'm going to quote him again, because he kind of, he's quite blunt and very practical. So he says, what good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? So if we have faith but we don't put that love into practice, we're not doing anything. We're not doing what Jesus did. We're not going out and meeting people. Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, be warm and well fed, but doesn't give them any food, physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith like a deed. Show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds. You believe that there is one God, good. Even the demons believe that and shudder. You foolish person, do you want evidence that faith without deeds is useless? So James also mentioned about sort of caring for widows and children in Inglaterra. And I think that's, you know, love is only worth something if we put it into practice. if we demonstrate, if we show them it to people. Otherwise, they don't know that we have it. And if we're not showing it, then people won't see what sets us apart. People won't see what the freedom that we have is. I think, and I'm guilty of this, we take our freedom and the cost of it for granted sometimes. It's very easy here to have to do that. You know, we can come to church with no risk to what we do. We can go home, we can go and live our lives as Christians with very little interference, let's be blunt, in this country. You know, we can... So therefore, it's quite easy to sort of get comfortable and complacent. And I think the reason that I started with sort of going through the passion is I think that unless we really appreciate how much something costs, we don't necessarily care for it in the same way that we do when something is really expensive. You know, if you go out and buy a cheap throwaway camper that costs £5, you're probably not going to be worried about it. If you spend a few thousand pounds, Matt's not here, but he likes to spend thousands of pounds on a camper. If you spend a few thousand pounds on a camper, you're going to make sure you've got the right piece for it. You're going to look after it because you don't want that getting broken. And our freedom is the same. We have an amazing freedom, and it costs more than any of us in this room can ever truly understand. And therefore, we should care about it. We have this freedom, and as I said, Jesus didn't die for a select chosen few. He died for everybody. It is then up to us to choose to be part of what he died for. If we think that we're chosen somehow, and then we can sit back and relax in our salvation. But actually, he died for everybody, and we chose to be part of it, and if we choose to be part of it, we want everybody. And we have to accept that it's not going to be easy, it's going to be painful, there's going to be issues that we need to deal with that perhaps we don't want to deal with. When I was talking this over with Steve the other night, he mentioned a verse about, you know, men like to hide in the dark, I can't remember what it is, I didn't include it, but, you know, and they're afraid of the light, I can't remember which one. And I think that's often the case. We like to let Jesus in the light bits of our lives, or the bits that we consider light, not the whole lot. And it should affect everything that we do in our lives, from how we worship on a Sunday, how we pray, what we get involved in, but everything. You know, the decisions that we make when we're walking down the street, we see somebody who is in need. You know, do we stop or carry on walking by? And those are the decisions that we have to make. And then we have to make a conscious decision every day to show the love that Jesus showed us to everybody that we meet. We have to love those who would persecute us. We have to love those who sin. Well, we sin, so, and we were loved, so why shouldn't we love other people? And if we do all of that, sounds so easy, doesn't it? If we try to do all of that, then others will see our faith and they will see Jesus' love through us. So if you can go to the last slide, I am going to conclude with a prayer, and I'm, if you would like to say along with me, I think it's as much for me as it could be for anybody else. So, Father God, I am sorry for that I have not appreciated the freedom you brought for me. The times I have not appreciated the cost of my freedom. I pray that I can, with your help, live in that freedom, however hard it may be, so I can show your love to all those I meet, whether they know you or not. Amen.